Okay, WeChat here on Radio Women Ho, and we're already getting quite a portfolio of fairly esteemed guests being lined up and some being recorded. You can contact us. We have an email address. It's as simple as jason@radiowivenhoe.co.uk. If you would like to volunteer yourself for this kind of conversation, it's very relaxed, believe me, there's nothing to it. Or if you know of anybody in the town who might enjoy or benefit in meeting up and really having a very informal off-the-record chat. And with that very, very point in mind, I'm very, very kind. I've got some time with Bob Needham, or Mayor Needham. And so, Bob, it's very nice to have you here. Thank you for your time.
It's my pleasure, actually, and it is relaxed. I can assure people that it is relaxed.
So we're both sitting here, mid-afternoon, cup of tea in hand, and I'm just thinking where to start, because I've done a bit of research on Bob, not an awful lot, and I think there's an awful lot of stories and information we can hopefully try and put across in the next 45 minutes or so. So maybe, Bob, as ever, a good starting point. So Wivenhoe and you, your kind of earliest memories, shall we just clarify, you're Wivenhoe born and bred?
Absolutely, yes.
And I don't want to really sort of date this anything too specific, but so roughly what kind of decade are we talking about here?
We can be specific, Jason, 1941.
So you were born in Wivenhoe in 1941. And would that be in the town itself, or maybe in Colchester, where you were actually born?
No, it was here in Rectory Road, opposite the site of what was the old rectory. It's now part of the small croquet garden site. There was the main entrance to the rectory, and a small bungalow opposite Rectory Road, opposite the entrance in Rectory Road, which is where I was born.
And has your family got a history of being in Wivenhoe? Do you know maybe how many generations were here, or was it a fairly new thing for your parents to come in?
Yeah, well, not strictly, not in Wivenhoe. My father was a military man. He was in the cavalry regiment and served in the cavalry barracks at Colchester. So in his military sort of move around, one of the places that he ended up in was Colchester. So that brings my parents to this particular location. Mother, was Heath, and the family, there was a, my grandfather was also a soldier, a military man, so he moved around quite a bit as well. So there is not a particular, anchor in Wivenhoe for the family, but by fate, I suppose, that my grandparents and my parents ended up in Wivenhoe.
So this would have been during the war years, so you mentioned 1941.
Yeah.
What are your earliest memories of being a very, very young child, Bob, actually in Wivenhoe? Can you think that far back, and is there anything which stands out in your mind?
Yeah, they go back, strange enough, there are some flashbacks of things like a German plane crashing in the fields at the back of where we call the Glebe, over there, but that's just a very fleeting sort of memory. I think the more positive memories are when I lived in Quay Street, and we used to see the boats coming in, bringing in the fish. Most of that would be either herring or we used to call sprats, and they would be stacked in wooden boxes on the quayside, outside where there are now modern flats, but it used to be we used to call it Wasps Factory, canning factory. They produced a product known as Fisher Girl. Fisher Girl, it was called Norwegian bristling, but it was sprats to our thinking. The boxes were stacked high on the quayside, and with just sufficient space to walk through. So if you can imagine young kiddies going through these alleyways amongst the boxes, that's a pretty distinct memory. Thames barges sailing up, and you could see them from almost every vantage point in the village, in as much that their very tall masts would be showing as the sails would drift past the rooftops, and it was a fantastic sight, that sort of thing.
It must have been quite an exciting place for a young fella really to be growing up. We sort of walk down there now and it's very, very pleasant. I think people are down there maybe for different reasons. It's not city life. And that's what brings me to Wivenhoe. But imagine, though, for a fairly young chap walking around and seeing these huge, big industrial boats going around, mm-hmm. and lots of alleyways to explore. there must have been quite a good time.
Yeah, it was. Of course, thinking about the river, we used to swim. We used to swim in the river, and there was just, you know, jumping off the edge of the quay, swimming across to the fingernail side and back again. Absolute delight for kids at this time of the year. Exploring alleyways, well, not quite so much that, but more of a question of exploring the woodlands, because, you know, what we commonly call Wivenhoe Wood now. We used to call it Thaney's Wood. I think it might have been, that was the local name for it. But just getting deep into the woods just seemed as though we were going into another land. It's amazing.
So was there maybe a feeling that your world was Wivenhoe? I'm thinking of Beating the Bounds, which we can perhaps touch upon later. But
yeah.
Did you pretty much just sort of stay in Wivenhoe, and that was ample for young folk around here to really occupy their time with?
Yeah, I would say that. There was quite enough scope within the village for youngsters to occupy themselves. And in fact, if you knew somebody that got a bicycle, they'd actually gone to Brightlingsea. You know, it's fantastic. They've gone away and they've seen different people. They've actually been able to engage with others and that sort of thing. And I would say that our knowledge of surrounding areas, we weren't living in absolute isolation. We had the rail lines and we had the trains and everything else. And we had the good old Cedric's coaches. These days, it's part of a fairly large transport concern. But in those days, it was Mr. Cedric Peck who ran the garage, which was opposite the co-op. And he had maybe three or four small Bedford buses, and he would drive them around. So travelling away wasn't a particular difficulty, but yeah, we did like to be contained within the village, and there was a lot to do.
So was Cedric's pretty much the official Wivenhoe travel agency? So that there was various, I don't know, was it weekend tours or were trips taken out, taking towns?
Yeah, I mean, he would use the coach very much as modern day coach excursions are used today. So typically we would go on a trip to Great Yarmouth, for example, and that would take us away for the entire day. And things like that, plus the regular service into Colchester, of course. Yeah.
Hmm. So that really is leisure time growing up as a young boy in Wivenhoe, but equally important, I'm sure, is schooling. So did you go to school around here locally?
Oh yes, I went to the school down here at Phillip Road School, and strange enough, it's pretty much the same as it was in those days. You'll probably recall that the Hub Youth Club meets there. And I had the opportunity to go in there once or twice now, and it's absolutely fantastic to walk in and just examine the building and try and bring back those memories of days gone by. Very little has changed, actually. The basketball pitch, or whatever it is on the outside, used to be an orchard. And in the summertime, we'd have our lessons out in the orchard and amongst the trees. So that was an aspect which came back to me immediately. But also the corridor and where the headmistress's office used to be. Now, most people, older people in Wivenhoe, will recall Miss E.N. Smith, Muggy Smith as we used to call her. She was the headmistress, and I do remember sitting outside her office on those seats there opposite the door, waiting to be summoned in as a naughty boy. So that memory came flashing back immediately. As soon as I entered the door, looked right and saw the office. Also got memories of my own particular master of our class, who was Mr. Lewis. And various other names there were, Mrs. Munson, and I'm trying to think, Miss Stan as well. So there are several names that can be recalled at the school. And I think two distinct memories. There was a Spitfire that flew low over the bridge, the High Street Bridge, and somehow or other managed to come along the rail valley almost eye level with the school and then pull up away from the other bridge. It was a fantastic feat, absolutely stunning. How or why it was done, I just don't know, but we were in the playground and this thing went past. And I suppose the other memory is in the winter time. Kids used to have a third of a pint of milk delivered, and they were delivered in iron crates, and these small bottles would sit outside and we would go outside to drink them at the appropriate time. playtime, milk time or whatever. But I remember in the winter time that the tops on the bottles would be standing up on, looking a bit like a mushroom, because they would stand up on a piece of ice, because as you know, when water and liquids freeze, they expand, and the content of the bottle just pushed upwards, and the lid was standing up at least an inch high over there, and simply frozen in the bottles because it would stand outside. And that would have been something like the winter of 47, which was a pretty severe winter.
Maybe on par with the winter of 2010, which you've just passed.
Yeah, not dissimilar.
But was it a mixed school, or boys or girls?
Oh, absolutely, a mixed school, yeah. No segregation either. Although, if I recall, I think there are entrances marked, or over the doorways, they're marked boys and girls. But that may have been something that remains from the original part of the school. But no, we had joint classes, boys, girls together and everything else. And I think we're the better off for it. I think that merging with boys and girls together at a very early age enables you to live together, work together, enjoy each other's company, and do it in just a broadly sort of common way, in an ordinary way.
Mm. And what kind of lessons were taught down at the Philip Road Centre? Was it a real traditional classic education?
Yeah, absolutely, the traditional stuff, you know, the sort of mathematics. We learnt our time, we called them times tables, and we would sit there, if it was our mathematics class, and we would say that, you know, 3 3s are 9, 4 3s are 12, 4 4s are 16. And that was the 3 times table and the 4 times table, and you would do all that. I'm pretty practical, and I enjoyed a lot of the art classes and being able to get my hands dirty, you know, or whatever. And I well remember Mr. Lewis saying that, Needham, you're better around the glue pot than you are around the ink pot. So
has that been an observation that has really proved to be correct? Has that been the story of your life, perhaps?
I don't think he was far away, and so in those very early days, he was probably identifying an aspect of my own character, that I'm a fairly practical person. I like to get my hands dirty. I like the interest, and something that absorbs you actually is art and craft and carving and woodwork and things like that. So that's ingrained in me, but I think also that over the years I've absolutely had to learn that the ink pot is just as important as the glue pot.
Mm. So moving on then from Philip Road Centre, what was your next kind of progression? So at what age would have schooling have finished there, please, Bob?
Yeah, we would have left there at the age of 11, and then go on to what then was known as the Brightlingsea Secondary Modern School. So we would all pile ourselves into a bus every morning to be taken to Brightlingsea. And there we obviously enlarged the scope and range of our education, being the type of school that it was. And again, the sort of things that interested me, we had seamanship classes. The school actually owned a boat. So you could do all of those lovely things, sailing a boat, scraping the boat, painting the boat, everything like that. We had gardening classes. I think it was called rural husbandry. that was the posh name for it, but we called it gardening. Each of the lads, and just to defy the sort of boys and girls set up, no girls involved, just the boys. And we had our own little plot, and we cultivated it, seeded it, and harvested it throughout the year. So another thing that I absolutely enjoyed, and we had woodwork classes and things like that.
It seemed like quite a localised education, so you're being taught things that were very relevant to the area, such as, you know, using boats and sailing, and also kind of practical gardening elements, which probably isn't the case nowadays, although we do still bus off with no young folk to Brightlingsea, many to continue. Yeah. And so what age then would you have left school in Brightlingsea, please?
Well, I would have left that just about 15 and a half, I think I was, at that time, and immediately went. See, in those days there wasn't the wide range of occupations for people to follow that there is now. Certainly technology, communications industry, non-existent. And typically, most of the lads went to one of the three main factories in Colchester, which was Woods, the air movement place. Colchester Lathes, non-existent now, but a common phrase that the world turns on Colchester Lathes, and indeed it did. And a little snippet, I mean, I was in Australia this time last year at a city called Maryborough. Had a hangover. I don't mean literally a hangover from too much alcohol. Had a stay over there because of the Icelandic ash clouds, and I had an extra week. And my host said, you know, what on earth can we do with this guy for another week? And I was quite happy just sort of bumbling around the city. But they did know of my interest, and there was a specialist manufacturing place there where they were casting aluminium wheels as replicas for vintage vehicles and things like that, really specialist work. And there were two Colchester lathes there, and they were absolutely vintage lathes as well. They were driven by leather belts, and they certainly were 80 years old. It was absolutely fantastic.
That's a fair distance, go all the way down from the old high Tesco area.
Yep.
Down to Australia.
Down to Australia. Yeah. So the world turns on Colchester lathes was a common expression, and indeed that was true. But that wasn't for me. I went to David Paxman's. There's a semblance of the factory still there, but at one time, in my time, there were 3,000 employees there, and they were turning out diesel engines from about 140 horsepower to over 2,000 horsepower engines. And I worked on heavy oil and rail traction and marine propulsion engines, and had a lovely time. The practicality is still there, and I served my apprenticeship there in the training school, and then as a test engineer. So if you imagine, would collect the assembled engines off the assembly line, transfer them over to the testing bay, and then run them up and provide all the necessary power tests and performance tests and everything else. Absolutely lovely. I think I would have probably been there now if I hadn't have had just a flash of thought about what I should be doing with my life.
But were you still living in Wivenhoe at the time?
Yes.
Yeah.
And we used to cycle. We used to cycle into Paxman's in Hythe Hill, and that was a daily routine, of course, yeah.
And which route would that be? So I imagine this is kind of pre the Wivenhoe Trail, so it would involve...
It would have been up what we call the Lower Way, which is simply the road alongside the university now, which then enters the Deal Carriageway, which wasn't there in our day, but what we know as Clingo Hill, and then on to what is now past the Tesco site, which would have been the lathe company, over the rail crossing, over the original Hythe Bridge. Keeping an eye out for the rail tracks in the tarmac, because there were a lot of shunting yards there, and you had open steel rail tracks where the wheels slotted in, you know. And if you got your bicycle front wheel stuck in there, that was it. If you were running parallel to it and the wheel dropped into it, then there's no way you can control it, and off you came. So you had to sort of cross pretty much at right angles to that. And then, of course, up Hythe Hill and into the factory.
And was Clingo Hill on a Monday morning, 8 o'clock, was it jam-packed then? No, it was a nice, clear run going down.
Yeah, you could take your foot off the pedals and freewheel down there, no problems, yeah.